Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Tonight, we got them, Goldie and the Sulk.
This is a typical, disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back, everyone, and a happy new year to all of you. Welcome back to A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I know. New year, same me. Boy, we had a tough day. We tried to record yesterday, and it did not go well. And I know there's one aggrieved party sitting here. So, Goldie, the floor is yours if you'd like to vent.
So we all agree to find this time when we can all leap on. And quite frankly, the time is always very convenient for you. Alex Sulkin. You're on the East Coast. You're 3 hours ahead. So it's like, could we get on at like 4:45 a.m. your time so I can, make my breakfast? So it's like, okay. So, you know, yesterday we all agreed to meet.
So untrue.
So early in the morning. I'm up at 5 to make sure the dog is all squared away. I got breakfast for the kids. I got coffee because I am a servant.
Or a good dad.
No.
I'm a good dog. You're a great dog dad.
I'm a guy everyone hates who they tolerate only because of the impeccable concierge service they're getting. Which, of course, I extend to you in coming up with a time for this podcast. So we all agree on this time. I've made incredible efforts to be there on time because it's very important to me. And because when I give someone my word, it means something.
And we're making a lot of money, let's be honest.
And I'll add, when JC gives someone her word,
ooh,
it means something. So whose word doesn't mean anything?
Oh, no.
Well, so after a series of 100 texts where we agree on a doable podcast time, because God forbid we set up a time every week where we just do it and lock into one, let's just make it like jazz. Let's make the time like, hey, whatever everyone's feeling, we'll work off each other. And I enjoy these texts so much because, you know, like the forced pleasantry of it all and the little like emojis. I love that shit.
I love emojis.
I fucking love when someone sends me emojis. I love you got it texts. I love having to respond to texts that say I got it with something else positive, because God forbid anyone not be left with the best feeling on the world in every exchange in every area of their lives. Or you're an asshole. Okay, so we've done all that. So as we approach the time, which, by the way,
First joke of the day.
It's 11 a.m. for you, whatever. It's some convenient time. It's insert convenient time for Alec.
11:30.
Sure. Yeah. So I've made all these morning preparations, and then 5 minutes before I get, there's no sorry. There's no sorry in the text. It just says,
there was.
Guys,
there was a sorry.
Didn't see it.
Sorry,
guys,
you two. Sorry,
I don't know,
you two.
I, like, my field of vision narrowed when I saw the text, and maybe sorry was outside the blurry stroke.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Okay. So it says, can't make it. There's a generator being delivered and installed at my house. So the power's off. I don't know how long, but maybe we can do it after. So, first of all, who doesn't know they have a generator being installed at their house? It's like a nuclear reactor is arriving. It's been in the driveway. Like, you would hear the diesel trucks pulling up your small, shitty nook for hours. You'd hear it. Over, it would cascade. The echoes would cascade. They'd roil over the bay because of flat land. There's nothing to do. So everyone knows this generator's coming within a fucking five-town radius. Okay?
Oh, God. How? First of all, say what you will about me, but how dare you disparage my nook? Take it back.
Your nook is all people who didn't have the guts to storm the Capitol, but like kind of silently agreed with it. Okay?
Yeah, well, that's
like
true.
Hiding behind a little like patriotic decorations is all like, don't tax me. I love America, but I don't want to pay for it.
I know. A lot of We Back the Blue.
A lot of like, and then a lot of like, well, I got out of Lehman Brothers just in time. A lot of those people.
Yes, they're all.
And you
here.
Know, I took the TARP money, but that was needed to save the economy. And when I keep my boat in the water, that employs a lot of people. That's your nook. Okay, yeah, so you have no idea a generator is arriving. Put up on Twitter, let's put up a poll. Would you know if a generator was arriving at your house? A, yes. B, no. And just see the results. See if people would be aware. Just see if that's something that people think they'd be aware of and decide they would be aware.
Feel free to send us an email at atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. Would know your generator was coming, just imagine also, put yourself in these shoes, okay? Sometimes things just appear. And I have no knowledge that they're coming. And by the way, our power was out for 6 hours yesterday. I am the victim of this story. You're bloviating, hectoring, pointing a lot of fingers for someone who was 10 minutes late today. By the way, after rescheduling 10 minutes late today. Oops, Alan. Sorry.
We'll get to that.
We just got to it.
We'll get to that after your fucking friendship ending event.
Ending.
No.
It's a fee. A friendship ending event.
That you tried to like hold up your wife to defend yourself, like a guy using, like Jack Reacher using a corpse to absorb punches and then punching out behind it. We'll blow past that.
Points for the Jack Reacher reference.
I love Jack Reacher.
By the way, another. How many Tom Cruise names are almost gay?
Well,
oh wow,
Jack Reacher, Stacy Jacks,
yep, there we go. Yeah.
There's a few. Yeah. Don't try to defuse me. This is like when you give a dog something from a treat pouch because it's barking at another dog. Yeah. Like yes,
and
I
it
will.
Worked. It
I
worked.
Will take the treat. Yeah, I will take the treat.
I know. Very
I will
funny.
Sit and I will give you paw and I will take the treat.
Thank you
for the treat. Now let's get back to where we were. So the second part of this, it's just so obnoxious, is I'll let you know if we can record later. Oh, okay. I'll just be on fucking standby for an indeterminate amount of time, buddy. And then just be ready to turn it on. Maybe I didn't plan to be by my phone. Maybe I had plans. Maybe I actually planned my day and my day isn't just podcast, 22 hours of marijuana and TV while my wife takes care of shit. Let's put up a second poll.
And wine.
Is your day mostly A, planned stuff, or B, a 1 hour plus Zoom that people should have agreed on, and then your wife does everything? Just it up there.
All right, third poll. Do you think Goldie has any plans in any day during COVID?
I have plans.
No plans. Zero. Walk a dog.
A lot to do.
Get angry. Get angry at your family without them knowing it, and then go on with your day.
They know it.
Oh, they know it. Well, by the way, and sir, the coda to this was. Then when the power did come on, so of course, and I'll pull the curtain back here. So my wife and I are sitting by the fire having glasses of wine.
You're sending that photo.
In my torturous day, we're sitting by a fire having glasses of wine. Then the power comes back on. So I'm two glasses of wine in and I text you guys like, let's do it. And to your credit, you were both like, okay, fine. And we all get on. Then came the technical difficulties. And this is where the conversation gets uncomfortable, because the shift of blame that goes
now. I did
now,
not feel responsible. That was out of my control.
Wait, how did you not feel responsible?
Well, because
whose fault was it?
It was the
of the
spectrum.
Three of us. Of the three of us on this Zoom.
I will not take the
Thank
blame.
Thank you. And by the way, this is very 2022. We can criticize women now.
Yes.
We can say it was JC's fault.
I would take it with huge responsibility, but it was not my fault.
Okay. There you go. That's
the
opposite.
Was down.
That's the opposite of what you just said in one sentence. You're like, I would take the responsibility, but it wasn't my fault.
If it were
if
my
it
responsibility.
Were my
and
fault.
You know, I'm quick to be like, guys, I've failed you. I'm so sorry.
You
and
are
I,
like that a lot.
And it's probably very annoying to you guys, but I will say I didn't feel that this time. I was like,
okay.
It's sort of like the person who's ultimately responsible for what happened, Alec, takes no blame. And the person who's not really responsible, JC, takes too much blame. It's a beautiful, like, fluid dynamic system.
It
levels out. The blame just finds a level like water.
It does. It wants to go to JC right now. I don't know why. You can't stop. Be water, my friends. Yeah.
But now you were just about to say that somehow you were going to pin the whole thing on me.
No.
There's
way. This morning you were late after all, Mr. I'm professional, I'm ready to go. You were late and you were like,
well, because time
forgot.
Means nothing now. Oh, we've established that.
In my house,
we're
time,
in a world where nothing means anything.
Time
there is no
a,
late.
Time is a fat circle in my house. and by the way, so fans, if you listened to our show last week, Goldie had an intro and an outro where he talked about one of us had COVID. And we are ready to reveal right now that person was JC. JC had, can we say past tense?
Had, yes.
Had. All right, congratulations. You're
Thank
out
you.
Of it.
Stu's better, too.
Stu's better. As of yesterday, he had a video doctor's appointment, and she was like, you're clear. If you have symptoms, you're still past the date where you can now go out into the world. And
oh,
suddenly
God.
He
well,
felt...
Well, don't listen to that, the CDC.
Well, it's been a very... I mean, I feel like it's been a very long time since we've been... Since
well,
we
tell
first
us about
sick.
The COVID experience, because I'm sure everyone who hasn't caught it, like me...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Me
has either. A morbid curiosity of
okay.
walk us
right.
through what it's like to have COVID.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we were not boosted, but we had two Modernas.
Mm-hmm. Moderna, baby.
We're Modernas. And... We were scheduled to have our booster on Tuesday the 28th. I started experiencing symptoms on the 23rd. And we had taken a home test because we were told that people who we were with were exposed. Mm. So we took the test and I said to Stu, you know, I'm surprised. I was actually expecting this to be positive. And then from then on, I just got more and more sick. And it felt like I started getting very achy. I never took my temperature because I don't like to know those details. I'm just like, I'm sick. I'm clearly feverish.
With their breathing stuff?
So Stu and I had completely different symptoms.
Okay.
I have the breathing stuff, the cough, a tiny bit of like head cold, but not like a severe thing. He had a higher fever, like you could tell. I mean, he took his temperature. We both had aches. I still have like a dry, relentless cough.
Ooh.
He does not have a cough.
Okay.
At any time did you feel in danger or you were concerned or felt like, oh God, I might have to go to the hospital, or was it all just kind of conventional sick?
For me, no. I was telling Alec earlier, I've had the flu, which was much worse than this. This felt like a drawn out cold, you know, like it just kind of lasted longer for me. And Stu
so
at last...
So cough a little longer.
Yeah, exactly. With Big Red.
Yeah.
And for Stu, he was experiencing... He always felt like he had low blood sugar, even after he was eating clean and healthy, even like drinking Pedialyte. He just always felt like there was something off, like it was a little shaky. And that was a little concerning. I also lost my sense of taste.
For how long?
Still don't really have it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, but I didn't lose my sense of smell, which I think is weird because they're usually hand in hand.
So you can lose because, oh, well, you're not boosted, but you're
maybe
vaccinated. But
yeah, maybe
you can
that's
still
why.
Lose that. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had thought that wasn't a symptom of Omicron, but I mean, now here it is. And, you know,
do you know you had Omicron though?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't, is there a way to find, you can get tested to know?
I don't know. I imagine they can determine that, but
okay.
I have no idea. But you're feeling better.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm feeling much better.
She clears her throat.
It is a little throaty and, you know, annoying in that way, but like it's not, I feel pretty good.
On a scale of 1 to 10, from easy breezy to worst thing ever, how do you rate COVID?
Is 1 easy breezy?
Yes.
Okay. I say for me, it was about a 6.
Hmm. Oh, that's a little higher than I thought.
Yeah, because
your description.
At the peak of the symptoms, I pretty much like to consider myself like when I'm sick, I can still handle business. You guys remember, I was just like, I can't figure this out. Can we just cancel the podcast?
Like, yeah, you were like Alec yesterday.
Yeah, and that's like...
and Goldie this morning, wherever the hell he was.
Like, that's like, that is not in my DNA. To say, I can't handle this right now.
Well, yeah. It might be now. It might be in your
DNA. I know. What if
now?
It's forever? Oh,
well,
no.
This leads me to one of my ideas, which, because all the headlines are about the intensive care where the hospitals are filling up.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
all the concern about that. And I've said this before. First of all, just make every bed in the hospital a bunk bed.
That's such a good idea.
And it's double brilliant. The capacity. And
wow.
by the way, yeah. The less sick person gets the top bunk as the reward, and the bottom person, because they're so sick, they're not going to kick the top bunk.
Right.
No, never.
So you're not going to have to go in there and settle these disputes of like, nurse, he's kicking my bunk.
He's kicking.
He wants to stay up late.
He's
using his flashlight. You would. So just, and then it makes the whole thing kind of fun, like a camp, and your ward
yes.
can have like little songs you sing at night
oh.
before you go to bed. We're intensive care, intensive care, intensive care, intensive care. We need more than regular care. But secondly, so
there, I like
there's
song.
All this concern about the doctors and the nurses. And there's a shortage. But like what a doctor does in these situations, I mean, you've had relatives in the hospital, you visit people.
Yeah.
The doctor comes in for under a minute a day and goes, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Look at that. Give him metformin. The doctor does nothing. Like most doctors do nothing. Like, okay, they're specialists. They know a lot about the heart. They do this intricate surgery. But most doctors, they read the machine. And they say the medicine. That's
yes.
it.
Yeah.
And it's
yep.
just by the book. So, first of all, promote nurses to doctors in these situations. Battlefield
yes.
promotion.
Ooh.
And
yes.
then, like, we have Army Reserves, right? Like, these are people who are not regular soldiers, but in wartime, they become regular soldiers.
Yes.
You get people like me, and you deputize them to be doctors.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm a smart guy. My dad
yes.
was a doctor, so I know
yep.
some stuff about it. And look,
you've
all
played,
the doctor in these situations is doing is they're looking at the monitor and they're, based on the reading, saying a medication as referenced by the physician's desk reference, the PDR.
Yes.
And they think they're
yes.
so great because they're like, don't come in here because you've researched on Google. And it's like, well, you've just looked in a book. Like a book is just analog Google. So it's not that much better than what I'm doing. Like you're just researching. So like give people like me... Like, my buddy in high school, Sean, was an EMT at age 17. So make every EMT just say, go in the hospital, you can be a doctor. Third, what happened to the field hospital? This was the greatest idea
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
happened to tents and beds outside? Make it a big camp with bunk beds.
Yeah.
Put
yeah.
it outside.
Bunk beds.
Give people air. Have deputized yeah, doctors going bed to bed going, your reading's 82. Take the metformin. This is all we need to do. This is a solvable problem.
I love this. I love this solution.
Get the
and also, you've played a doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Memorably.
You know, so credibly. Memorably, credibly, and very well, I might add. Very.
Yes.
You scored a huge laugh.
Intent
on the wide two. Shot. On the wide shot.
Oh, the close-up.
The close-ups.
My eyelids started going crazy because
can
I was
you
so
see
nervous.
That? I got to watch it. Oh, that's
I
so
know.
Sweet.
Well, it's not in the movie, but they're shooting.
They were smart enough
outtakes?
To keep
I don't know if I've told this story on here about my introduction into movie acting where I booked this part in Ted 2 to play this doctor. And it was in two or three scenes. It was a real part. You know, there were several lines. And I'm very nervous because I don't want to screw this up. And I'm also playing a doctor. My dad was a doctor, so I feel rather stupid. And yeah, I've flown in from L.A. I'm staying in Boston. And so I'm just trying to remember my lines. I'm going to set. And as I'm going to make my first appearance on set, I hear, "Ladies and gentlemen, that's a rap on Morgan Freeman." Oh, no. And it's like, well, it's not going to be good now. The greatest living film actor is leaving set. And here comes this novice who also has a head cold he's told no one about because he knows the director is paranoid about sickness.
Oh, yes, and turns out rightfully so. Yes. And by the way, if you also squint in that movie, you'll see a 25-pound heavier me playing Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, you put did you put the weight on for the role?
Or yeah, I put it on for the role. I'm a pretty serious actor.
Obi-Wan, eat donut.
I know. I used to refer to myself as Obi-Wan Kenobody. I thought that worked pretty well. One.
He's so big, he's Obi-2 Kenobi.
Oh, that's great.
There's so many jokes.
All right. Well, that's a very good theory, Goldie. I think that could really work. Just one other short thing that I wanted to talk about today, which I qualify as a Hollywood cautionary tale.
Oh, wow.
And Goldie, you brought this up in a writer's room a couple of weeks ago, and it made me laugh more just because of the memory of it. So for those listeners out there who are old enough to remember, in the very early 80s, there was a Kellogg's cereal called Raisins, Rice,
and Rye.
That's right. Raisins, Rice, and Rye. So basically, it was just the cereal itself seemed to me now in retrospect just to be an excuse to use all the stuff that had fallen on the floor at the Kellogg's plant, like raisins from the Raisin Bran, rice from Rice Krispies, and whatever the fuck rye was. And let's just put it in a box.
In their defense, in the 1980s, raisins were a much bigger deal.
Yeah,
like, I know. They were raisins for no
dominated
reason.
The 80s, the California raisins. Raisins were everywhere. They were, we say in Hollywood, having a moment.
Yes. Right.
So raisins, rice,
and rye.
And the reason Goldie's saying it like that is because the early 80s commercial, it was like three Scotsmen. I don't know how to say that. Scotsmen. Three Scottish guys, older guys. Okay. So, and they're like going to a boat, presumably to go to America.
Also, let me just add, they're all dressed like Sherlock Holmes for some reason.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It just very over the top. Like a lot of wardrobe goes into it. So there are these three older Scottish guys. They're trying to get to their boat to America, but then they're sidetracked by a delicious bowl of raisins, rice,
and rye.
So they see it off to the side and they're like, oh, shit, we're not getting on this boat. We got to eat this bowl of fucking chaff from the Kellogg's plant. So
they're also speaking in rhymed couplets.
Yes, they are. It's very sort of Burns-ish. They're sitting there saying, "Bagosh, bagoli, bagorn," you know.
"Bagosh, bagum, bagoli, raisins is my folly. A cereal called raisins, rice, and rye."
Yeah. So it's this ridiculous ad. And like, so they eat the cereal and they miss their boat. Okay, so after Goldie talked about it in the room, I went, because he rattled the memory of the ad, so I went to go look at the ad, and I watched it a few times. And then I looked down at the next YouTube. So that said, Kellogg's Raisins, Rice, and Rye, 1980. And there's one right below it that says Kellogg's Raisins, Rice, and Rye, 1981. Ooh. So they have a sequel. They have a sequel commercial. And the second commercial, they're sitting on Loch Ness. And the Loch Ness monster like kind of emerges. They're looking for the Loch Ness monster. Wow. But again, they're distracted by raisins, rice,
and rye.
So they don't see the Loch Ness monster that's like drifting behind them. And I think ultimately like lifts their boat. But here's the Hollywood cautionary tale of this second sequel commercial.
Okay.
All three Scottish guys are different. They've been recast.
Oh, wow.
So they could not even. So whatever. What probably happened was the first guys from the Raisins, Rice,
and Rye
commercial probably thought they were, as you said, having a moment. and came back to Kellogg's and said, "We demand more money for this second sequel. This is our chance to really stick it to Hollywood." And Kellogg's just said, "Nope."
Bye.
Three completely different Scottish guys in the ad. And by the way, the guy in the second ad who says, "And Roy," is way worse.
Oh, no.
The guy in the first ad is much better.
I mean,
so if
I'm always looking for a movie idea, and I feel like this could be my Trumbo. Like, you just do an in-depth look at this year. It's a period piece. You've got all the, like, 80s fashion, the cars.
I love
you
it.
You know, you start on such a high, they're coming off the Raisins Rice Undrei set of the original shoot. The boat has left. And then you just follow these three as it all falls apart. I mean, this is like a Paul Thomas Anderson sprawling epic about nothing.
Right. Yes. Just about characters.
Yes. And like, and like how they're, you know, the one or two of them are at an Edinburgh like football match and they get a standing ovation. It's from the Raisins Rice Undrei.
He's Undrei.
There's Undrei. But then they're fall off. Of course, cocaine would probably have
What's on the soundtrack? Ooh, like, "Don't Stand So Close to Me."
Oh, 80, 81. Wow.
Was Level 42 Scottish? No.
My love, Jeopardy? That level 40. Is Jeopardy 83 or is that 80?
I think it's a little later. Right. God, I should be good at this. 80 and 81 music, by the way, is really bad. Like, I love 80s
the
music,
cars?
But 80... they had some stuff in the late 70s and then came back again in like 83, 84 with Heartbeat City. But the 80, 81 music was so affected by the urban cowboy effect that there was so much of this like schlocky bad, like country ballad shit that was sort of wafting around. And there was still a lot of like Barbara Streisand. And she's great, but it's just like not the pop music that we associate with the 80s.
But this is somewhere toward the end of Act Two. like sex, drugs, and losing it all montage
set to
Aerosmith's Kings and Queens.
Oh, that's good. We, you know what? We need to think of who are Scottish bands. Like, are the Bay City Rollers? I think they were Scottish.
Simply Red.
Simply Red. He was a little later.
Oh,
that weirdo. I love that song though.
Yes.
Holding Back the Years. Oh, yeah. That makes me feel it in my hat. Anyway, I thought that was a funny thing that from Raisins, Rice, and Rye, Riding High in 1980.
Yeah.
Nope, we're replacing all three of you in 1981.
It's like cut to a year from now, a typical disgusting display is just three different younger people.
And who would notice? By the way, we never even have risen to the level of the end rye.
So,
Yet.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, well, we're making a joke of ourselves, so we might as well get into it. Let's get into the part of the show that's killing us. Let's get in to Johnny Jokes.
Here's Johnny's!
Here are Johnny's. Multiple Johnny's. Okay, I'm still scrolling through to see what I'm going to do here. All right, let's start with this one. Oh, this is an interesting story. A New York area man who passed as an NFL player in order to collect two Super Bowl rings from the Patriots has pled guilty to fraud.
Mm.
Yeah. A spokesman for the prosecution, citing privacy laws, said the man was known to the court only as Eli M. stole two rings from the Patriots.
I don't even understand how you could do that.
Right.
I know. I don't know either, but I read that story. Yeah. Somebody said they were a player, got two rings, and had to give them back.
Amazing.
Amazing stuff here. All right. Let's get down to this one. Tesla, automaker Tesla. Uh-huh. Has recalled almost 500,000 vehicles due to a front camera issue. But for you owners, no need to hassle bringing them in. Elon Musk simply stands on a mountaintop, blows an alpine horn, and the vehicles come to him. They're very
That's
smart,
funny.
Those
I like it.
Thank you, other Johnny. Okay, well, here's some not-so-great news. The U.S. set a scary record this week, registering over 1 million COVID cases in one day. Yeah. Health experts say the massive spread is due to colder weather, low vaccination rates, and Spider-Man No Way Home. I hope it was worth it, nerds. Yeah. Thank you very much.
In Pete Davidson's bedroom.
There you go. I like that. Pete Davidson's boudoir. Okay. Here's the last one, and it's a long one. Oh, boy. Okay. Those are always good. Well, there's a new resident at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, a German Shepherd puppy named Commander. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Though some feel the president is a little too old to raise a puppy, yeah. Apparently, yesterday, he was out in the Rose Garden playing fetch with the White House Roomba.
Oh, no.
All I wanted to do was say White House Roomba.
The dog, in this case, the dog, is a herring, a red one.
Nice.
All right, take it away, other Johnny. Right.
Well done, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Well done. Very good. Congratulations. All right, here we go. Alimahan Sayiti. Alimahan Sayiti, China's oldest person, has died at the age of 135.
Wow.
Yeah. He gone!
Yeah, he is.
She gone.
She gone.
Yes. She was married at 17, had 43 great-great-grandchildren, and spent the last 35 years occasionally blinking. All right. KFC. Kentucky Fried Chicken, as it was formerly known, now KFC, will soon begin a nationwide rollout of a plant-based fried chicken that they created in a lab. Yeah.
Wow.
Apparently it's delicious, and each bite contains the Colonel's secret blend of herbs and 3D printed polymers. Okay.
Funny.
Here we go. A 75-year-old man in Hawaii died after falling into an erupting volcano.
Wow.
He gone!
He is gone. Yeah. Rescuers were forced to flee spewing hot lava and reported hearing the volcano shout after them, I said a virgin. And finally, I think I'm going to switch into a normie joke here. This one's more of a norm.
All
right. And finally, there's a shortage of pet food, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it's a national emergency. Due to supply chain woes, there's a shortage of pet food. If it continues, dogs may soon have to make do with their first choice, other dogs' shit.
That's great. That's great. That's boy, good. One of our three dogs is a big other dogs' shit gal.
Oh, boy.
Can't get enough of it. Can't get enough
Don't
of it.
Don't you just feel like the weight of the world off you when we finished a successful Johnny Joe?
I do. Oh, my God.
Yeah, those are great,
if we
guys.
Could just wait till 2023 to do the next round, that would be the ultimate prize. I skipped a joke that was I was just going to do in my own voice, which I was hesitant to do about Eddie. The punchline is just, it's Eddie Vedder's birthday. Yay, 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 yay. But I didn't have the guts. Didn't have the guts. That would be a good Viner joke, by the way.
It was good.
Yes, well done. Well done, second Johnny. Well done.
Yeah,
God bless us all.
Great. Yeah.
Now, before we get to our theme this week, which is we're gonna talk about working with celebrities. Ooh, how titillating and exciting. We wanted to read a couple more viewer emails that caught our eye, and we thank you for writing them in, and you can always write them in at atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. Send us any comments or thoughts or criticisms that you have, or hopefully suggestions, because we'll take them, believe me.
And let us just know if you'd know if a generator was arriving at your house.
Love it. So, JC, do you have a couple that we had picked?
I do. I have three.
All right, sure.
Okay.
Go for it.
This first one is from Bridget Wiley. Hi, Bridget.
Oh, yes. Executive.
Hello. Yes.
Extraordinaire.
Yes. Yes. Hey, and happy new year. I have been listening to your podcast since the start and believe I have listened to every one of them. I do a lot of driving here in LA, so this makes it all better. Wanted to write to say thanks for all the many, many laughs. I work in the business, exec not writer, so I enjoy, laugh, and relate. And I'm old enough to remember watching Johnny Carson with my grandmother, who was obsessed with his very handsome ties. Aww. I could go on, but thank you. All the laughter and maybe shared frustration has been great medicine in this insane year.
Oh, thank you, Bridget.
Sometimes I just want to hear good things about us.
I know.
I have no reaction to it other than just thank you. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
We appreciate you as well.
But we appreciate you very much. And I believe she used to work at 20th. I feel like she was there. I don't know. I mean, she's certainly someone I've been aware of for while, and she's ascended to the highest peaks of the industry.
You're important too, and you know important people.
I think I've rubbed elbows with Bridget Wiley before. And by the way, Bridget, in the email where you say you could go on, please feel free to go on. we don't mind the on part.
The opposite of me writing.
I know.
I can't go even on, much less and on.
As Stephen Bishop would say, on and on. Thank
you,
Bridget.
I have two settings, off and unplugged.
That's good. That's where you should put your head in your hand for your book photo. All right, let's hear another one.
Okay, this is from Carla McGee. And she says my full name, which is really nice. It says, to Janice Cruz Brooks, Alex Sulkin, and Julia Sharp. So I guess she says all of our names. But I wanted to extend my sincere thanks for doing all the hard work and putting out a podcast every week. Thank you for sharing your knowledge about writing, music, and voice work. That would normally be enough for a podcast, but then all of you provide me with over an hour of belly laughs. You have gotten me through dark times while being a caregiver, and I look forward to each new release. All of you are so immensely talented, and for me, this is the best podcast out there. On a last note, although the Johnny jokes cause you much anxiety, please don't lose them. That segment brings tears in a good way to my eyes each week. Thanks again, Carla McGee.
Promote this woman to doctor right now.
Exactly.
I know. Enough. But by the way, she just...
You're a doctor!
You're a doctor, Carla. Dr. McGee. That sounds like a joke. Dr. McGee walks into an OR. But by the way, she just ensured that now we have to do Johnny jokes.
Yes.
It's like in all that. But that is, again, that's very nice. It almost sounds like these were selected just to puff us up.
Well, there's a third one that was selected to puff you down.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I thought it was just two. Two's good. Two's the magic number, right?
Everything in this guy's weed addict life is puffing.
the comedy rule of twos. The comedy rule of twos. Okay, that's it then.
No. This is, you may remember this name. You may recognize this name.
Okay, hit me with it.
Frank Townsend.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Frankie from high school. Frank Townsend, sure.
Oh, cool. Yes. So after last week's episode, listening to fan mail, so this is a little later.
Right.
I was inspired to write in.
Oh.
I don't know if your entire fan base is made of people who knew you when, but I am one of those. I also love hearing about growing up in Boston, high school shenanigans, and so forth. I also don't write and don't care to.
Oh, okay.
Next paragraph. Here we go.
Yeah.
Alec made fun of me two or three times in high school
mercilessly
that I still remember the quips to this day.
Oh, boy.
One was about my terrible haircut. This tracks.
He had a particularly bad haircut, but let's keep going.
As true then as it is now, although it got better for a while after the 90s, and one was about my Boston accent.
Oh.
Ironic, given that your stock in trade seems to be riffing on the accent today.
It's true.
I'm sure there were more. Goldie, Guy Van Duzer is still alive, teaches at Berkeley, and was seen by me recently ordering a falafel wrap in our mutual hometown of Hull, Massachusetts.
This is a guy who I had mentioned several podcasts ago that I enjoyed playing his guitar arrangement of an Irving Berlin song.
Yes.
Right.
And I said,
right.
I don't know if he's still alive, and he's buying falafels and euros.
In Hull. Yeah. In Hull.
And he, check this out. He played at my wedding almost 30 years ago.
Wow. Jesus.
That's so cool.
He got married young.
Yes. Keep up the good work. Janice is the best. Aw, thank you, Frank.
Aww.
Also, have you done podcasts for your top five segment?
We don't. We only listen to our own stuff.
I listen to
We're like Neil Young. Neil Young only listens to his own music.
Sort of a routine that was a 10 with then a slightly botched dismount where he stepped forward and like landed on his toes and then put his arms up and smiled and kind of saved it. But it's like, that was the weakest part.
Yeah.
As a writer, that's a cut. You had it. You had won.
You mean that Janice is the best.
There you go,
take a knee. As I tell writers all the time, take a knee. Don't get hurt right now. You have won. Just grab the ball, get down on one knee, and let the time run off the clock. Don't try to get one last run in.
Oh, I'm so glad Frank has now been insulted by both of us. Oh, that's wonderful. But let me tell you a little something about insulting Frank Townsend. First of all, and I said this, you've heard me say this before, I think I'm probably the one of the physically weakest bullies of all time. So like I was in high school a bully who at the first sign of any physical confrontation just would be gone.
Right.
So the best.
Have you
kind,
ever been punched?
Never.
Wow.
Never.
Wow.
No. Well, I've got sort of a Matrix thing where you start to punch at me and my head's bobbing. You don't know. No, I'm kidding. Nobody's ever thrown a punch at me. You know,
that's insane given your personality.
I know. It really is. It really is. I think they're vaguely aware that it would be like a hate crime because I'm Jewish. So I use that protection.
Especially given that that nose is just sitting there.
I know. It's the first piece. It's exhibit A in the hate crime right there. You see this, jury?
Yeah, the nice turn.
I'm aggrieved.
He's showing
if you were
profile.
A boxer, the other person's punch count would be insane because they can't miss. It's like right. You duck out of the way, you're still getting tipped.
All right, come on.
This is for Frank. Yeah. I'm just trying to hit back.
Yeah, Frank, I'm sure could have gone there. It's an obvious joke. But Frank Townsend, first of all, absolutely the sweetest guy in no way deserved to be made fun of. He was it was a boarding school, but he was a day student, two-way driver. Yeah. So and his haircut that he was talking about and that I obviously talked about, you know how like when you see pictures of like that haircut that's really terrible but popular in Russia? Where like the bangs are all separated.
Yes.
That was the kind of haircut that he had.
Right.
Which was sort of very popular in Massachusetts in the early 90s.
Okay. Good point. Yeah. Okay.
So
that's
Russia
fair.
Sort of lifted our style. Yeah, Goldie knows exactly what that is.
I think I got that haircut several times.
So
and sort of no matter what you asked for, they'd give it to you.
Yeah. Because Massachusetts barbers are not the best.
Oh my God. Everything you say you want. It literally is like they zone out and their hands just start moving. And I'm sorry to derail us, but
no,
it just brings back this memory of, so there was this barber shop that's no longer there in my hometown called Avenue Barber Shop, where it was sort of the $8 cut. It was before super cuts. There were just these barber
local
shops
barbers.
That
yeah.
were composed mostly of war veterans getting and receiving haircuts.
Right.
And they had Playboys strewn about. They were sort of like men's spots.
Clubs,
and anyway,
yeah.
I started going to this place to get a flat top haircut, which was $8.
Right.
And there were two guys who work at this place. One was named Victor, who was this Cuban guy. And then the other, no one knew the guy's name. And everyone would come in and be like, yeah, I'll wait for Victor.
Yeah.
And literally, I think they did a Seinfeld about this. But I mean, it was a situation where there'd be 10 people lined up for one guy. And then the other guy's just standing there.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
I mean, years of his life, maybe giving one haircut a day. But then occasionally, while you were there, someone would come into the barbershop who hadn't been in the barbershop before and go, oh, I'll go.
Yeah.
And you would watch as their hair would get so unbelievably fucked up by this guy. And then literally Victor would have to come over and save that guy's botched haircut. And I don't know what the relationship was, but I do remember so distinctly that one time that guy started washing a vacuum in the sink.
What?
And Victor was like, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? What the fuck? That's a vacuum. You can't put that vacuum in the sink. What the fuck, man? What the fuck, man? And he just started screaming, what the fuck, man? And I was at the time 11.
Right.
And just sitting there, you know, waiting in line for my haircut. But
that's so great. I love that. Yeah, you're right. Everybody, I always, in the summer, it was just I'd go into Joe and Jim in Weston Center at the barbershop, Joe and Jim, and I'd just get a whiffle.
Yes, the whiffle. Does anyone use that term anymore?
What is that?
Just give me the whiffle cut.
And what's whiffle a whiffle?
Because it's like a crew cut. It's like it's another term for, it's just a very short summer like crew cut.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd get a whiffle and then you'd drink a fribble.
Yeah, that's right. Whiffle, fribble.
Way to bring it back.
but anyway, back to Frank. Frank was a very good athlete, as I recall, like a good hockey player, and could have torn me in half if he wanted to.
Should have.
So I just, I know, he should have. Then there'd be two of me here. You wouldn't have to be here, Goldie.
Wait, what?
But so I just want to say, Frank, I apologize from very far away for all the times that I insulted you. But I hope now that, you know, maybe you see like, oh, this guy was some kind of comedy savant. He couldn't help it.
Savant.
And hey, Frank, if you run into Guy Van Duser again, you pay for that falafel or Eero, and then I'll Venmo you the money. Just say, hey, Guy, this one's on Julius Sharp.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. And I see that from the email address that Frank is now a professor at Tabor Academy. So, Frankie, way to go, buddy.
Cool.
You're molding young minds.
Our high school teachers that. Professors now?
They are. I'm going to call them professors.
Okay. I didn't battlefield promote teachers in this scenario. I battlefield promoted nurses and caregivers to doctors. We can talk about the professor thing. That's a separate conversation.
Frank, you've been insulted twice now by Goldie, which is as many times as I insulted you in a lifetime. There you go. So, Frank, thank you for writing in.
Thank you
for listening. Thank you all for writing in. And again, atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com. Write us anything you want.
Yeah.
And if it's nice, we'll read it.
Yeah.
If it's mean, we'll read it.
I will say we have received other emails. You know, this isn't, this was just like, we'll just grab a few and, you know, there's still
at
more.
At random.
Yeah.
Pulled them out of the bin.
Yes.
They just happened to be all really nice and one that insulted me. Or actually, I insulted someone else that made me look like an asshole.
It was a bin laden with emails.
Oh, wow.
Very nice. You know I love that. I'm not going to be able to think about anything else for a while. That was great. But let's think about something else right now. We're going to talk for just a little bit about our theme this week, which is working with celebrities. So when you become a writer, as we did many years ago, you are going to have to deal with the celebrities on your show, whether it's the host of a late night show, whether it's the actors on your sitcom, or even the actors on your animated show. They're all going to be certainly more famous than you are. And if they're on this show, they're also going to be like the celebrities of your show. So maybe even if the celebrity on your show is not necessarily like this A-list celebrity, they are a celebrity in your building and almost demand to be treated as such. So here we're going to talk about some ways, maybe the best ways and some not so great ways to deal with that situation. Now, Goldie, you and I, when we first started, our celebrity, and he is a celebrity, was Craig Kilborn. And dealing with him, I would say was, you know, they're all different, but Craig had his own feel and you could kind of lock into it right away. And you and I certainly had a great time working with him. And I think that he liked both of us, which was a nice thing. But you had to, you know, there was always a certain level of separation, like, hey, I'm the star and sure. you guys are my underlings. And I think the
and
more
that's
you
right.
can,
that's
yes, the more you can be okay with that and acknowledge yeah. the truth, like the easier it's gonna be for you to work in that scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have any memories of working with Craig like that?
Well, I think first, you know, I had come from, I was doing stand-up in New York for several years. And then when I sort of got this, and thanks to your help again, this writing job, and I was about to turn 30, and it was kind of like this miraculous break in my life, I was very nervous. You know, I really didn't want to blow it. So obviously, a lot of times when you're dealing with celebrities, you're bringing in this baggage of you've worked very hard to get to this spot and you want to do a good job. And this person is sort of a gatekeeper and you want to have a good relationship with them. And so the first and most important thing is you got to calm your nervous system because,
yes.
I mean, I was, when I saw Craig the first time, I was tongue tied. It's just such a heavy moment for you, and to them it means nothing because
right.
you know, I think a mistake people make is they want these interactions with celebrities to mean something, but celebrities by their nature have so many interactions yeah. that if they were to make them mean anything for them, then they would be instantly destroyed as people. And
they'd
it's
be
like
burned out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's yeah. like, do you remember the fly that landed on you last week? No.
No.
Like, you can't possibly keep all these flies straight because they're just constant. There's a never ending supply of flies. And to right. them, it's like a lot of people come up to them. People want to praise them and they want to handle it in the right way. But it's just another pain in the ass if you come up and you're kind of staring at them weirdly. And it's, you know, I've been watching a lot of Dog Whisperer, so I'm thinking in this uh-huh. mode, but there's like a physical thing you can feel. It is a feeling of you're approaching them with your nerves and you can feel their unsure reaction.
Yes.
And it's a weird thing. And so the first thing, if you have any way you use of calming your nervous system, I would do it.
Yes, that's 100% right. And I feel like we should point out for the audience's benefit and for Craig's benefit that he's 6'5", perfect skin, natural host. So yeah, when yeah. when you're walking up to Craig, it's almost like you're walking up to the sun. You know, there's this thing of like,
especially when you're trying to hide your balding.
I know you can't.
A series of increasingly spare faux hawks. It's a very transparent faux hawk.
But Craig was a guy, and to deal with Craig, it was really fun because it's funny. I think in certain situations when I've met celebrities, I get nervous. Like, you know, when I met Michael J. Fox, it nearly destroyed me because I was so in awe of him. And I'm sure if I ever was lucky enough to meet someone like, you know, Paul McCartney or something, I would just have... When I met Tom Brady, I was completely tongue-tied.
Oh, yeah, I can't imagine.
And just got in there for a picture and got out, and I don't even remember what I said. But with someone, again,
I know what you said. You said, thank you for all the great Sundays.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, which I think was a nice thing to say, get in and get out.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, you don't want that on your tombstone.
No, it wasn't great. It wasn't an awesome, it wasn't like a Will Rogers kind of quote.
It's a like foul ball into the net behind home plate.
Yep, did not a strikeout. That's all I care about.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
But there's a thing, and we've talked about this on other episodes, where, you know, when you're first starting in a writer's room, some of the writers in that room will be like celebrities to you. Like when I first worked with Mike Scully, you know, I'd seen his name for a decade in front of The Simpsons. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm sitting in a room with him now. But here's the thing. And Goldie, you've been very eloquent on this topic.
Look, Mike puts his pants on both legs at a time, just like you.
Just jumps into him from the second floor window in Malibu, both legs at a time. But you have to have a certain level of confidence in yourself because you've been brought on board. Like
yes.
you've been brought into a writer's room because somebody liked your spec, they liked you in an interview. When you're meeting this celebrity who's on this show that you've been brought onto, you also have to have, like, don't be a dick, but you have to have a certain level of confidence in yourself. Again, like you said, your energy, if you have a nervous off the chart nervous energy around that celebrity, they're going to bristle and they're going to decide instantly, oh, I don't really want to be around this person. I don't like that energy. And we saw Craig do that many times with many people whose energy he didn't like. And then they were never in his office. Whereas you and I were summoned into his office daily because he was comfortable around us. So take a deep breath. Be confident in yourself. You've been brought here. You know, it's not like you've run up on a celebrity and you're asking for an autograph. You're there to work with that person. So take a deep breath, have confidence in yourself, and that'll help immensely.
And remember, like, nice. They're pros at these interactions, right? Because they've had so many more reps than you have. So
yes,
they've almost got jujitsu-like skills of, here's what this interaction is. I'm going to get myself out of it quickly by, like, Rob Lowe was great at this. He's like, he knows you're meeting Rob Lowe.
Yes.
He knows
it's a big deal for you. And tell the people where you worked with Rob Lowe.
On the Grinder.
Yeah, yes. I like that.
And he knows he's Rob Lowe. He knows the effect he has on people. He values his celebrity. He values their adulation. So he gives them a moment, but then he's kind of like, you know, let's get on with our lives a little bit, which is totally the right thing. Right. And I think Craig was that way too, like, because there were people who would come up to them and it was so calculated, you could tell, where they would be like, because they knew he liked basketball, they're like, how about that game last night, boss? You know, and it's like, think about the situation you're putting him in, which is like, wait, what is he supposed to say to that? So I would encourage people, remember, if you're hired on a show, you're playing a longer game. You're going to be there, whether it's 13 weeks or half a year. So you don't have to blow some celebrity away in this first interaction and make some joke and give them a lot. Like, you're going to fall into a working relationship with them where hopefully you will, at a time when they need it and value it, give them jokes or lines or writing or direction on set. And then they will say subconsciously, hey, this is a cool person I can trust. Then you can form a real rapport, which will never develop into an actual friendship. Don't count on that. Although, like, with us Craig. And Craig, it did. Yeah. But that's the exception. Like,
yes.
When it starts feeling like a friendship, my second point is, don't push it. Just enjoy it for what it is, that you're hanging out with a celebrity and having a good time. Don't ask them to do something with you.
No.
Don't tell them about your kid's party. Don't. If they are to make some move and they want to hang out with you, you'll know.
Yes.
Some assistant will tell you that person would like to see you alone. Otherwise, just keep giving them the lines. Enjoy the bonhomie.
Oh, yeah. I love that word.
Nice.
And get on with your life. French because that's another thing is, I think people get so excited that you're living some form of your dream. And it's very intoxicating to be in play in show business, that you can overstep. And at the end of the day, they want their privacy justifiably, because again, everyone wants to hang out with them, which then, you know, allows them to have the complex of like, everyone really wants to hang out with me, but no one actually knows the real me, and they can write a stupid book about it. But you shouldn't push that, I would say, for your own, because
totally agree.
If you get known as a person who does that, it will get back to people. And it won't reflect well.
No, and it's funny, it like how the points that we've made in other podcasts about other areas of the business are totally relevant in this spot as well. Because I remember when we were talking about when you're first starting your writing job, be on time, you know, on time. Because it's like you said, Goldie, I think very well, people will always think of you as the person who is late if you show up late in your first couple weeks. There's the same lesson to be drawn from hanging out or working with celebrities. You want your first couple of encounters to be smooth, because if there is something weird or you're having a nervous energy or you just seem a little too needy, that celebrity is always going to think of you as the needy guy or the nervous guy or the sweaty guy. And like you just sweaty. Don't want to be that. So again,
especially when, like, here's a situation you may be in, okay, you know, and I found myself in on the set of The Grinder. Like, I grew up watching Rob Lowe. I love him. I think he's hilarious. And obviously he's like a stunning, like, he's a stunning man. Right. And so it's intimidating to go up to him, and they go up and they say, hey, can you run the lines by Rob? Or Rob doesn't like this line. Can you come up with something? And hey, it's your job to come up with something. Like, there's no option to say, I got nothing, guys. Yeah. Right. I'm not feeling it today. Can someone else come up with something?
Oh, man, like, do I have to?
Because you'll be on set and you'll be pushed into work. Like, sometimes they'll send you to set to under the guise of just hang out there and no big deal. And then all of a sudden, they'll do a run through and they won't like the scene. And then they'll look to you and the head writer's not there and the sort of hierarchy is gone. Now that is, while it's a moment that causes a lot of anxiety, that is a huge opportunity. Because if you step in and you say, here's a line, you know, and I was able to have these situations with Rob Lowe, I think, where I was like, here's an idea. And he liked them. And then it was like, well, now I got a great rapport with this guy. And I didn't have to at any point go up to him and go, I love doing all these things. You were so fun. Which he is and was. Yeah, and I would happily do and say truthfully. But like, he doesn't need that. He needs a good line.
Right.
Because he takes his job seriously. And because what makes him look good, what makes people remember him are funny lines when he's on screen. Yeah. And that's why we're all there. And you're there to serve that person. And
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So now I'm taking Rob Lowe out of this because it's going to sound like this is coming off him, which it's not. But the other thing is, you know, you alluded to being on time and being ready to do your job. And that should be the expectation for everyone on set. But if the celebrity is not on time and unprepared to do their job, it's your job to not show that this is throwing you, angering you, phasing you, pissing you off.
That's really important.
That, like, there's a reason they're the celebrity and you're the writer, because they're irreplaceable. They're the face of it. So, like, you will have to put up with behavior in them that you would not be put up if you were to do that behavior. And that's just the deal.
That's the way it is. And that, and honestly, to get to Seth MacFarlane, who we've both worked with for a very long time and continue to work for, Seth is notoriously late for things. But again, it's his show. He's the reason we're all sitting here and collecting checks. If he's going to be an hour late, we can't sit there and complain about it. You just have to be ready when he sat in the room to start pitching jokes on his timetable. And that's, you know, that happens on so many shows. And you just got to be able to go with the flow. And another point with Seth, because it's a different kind of dynamic, because Goldie, you, Seth and I are the same age. If anything, he's a little younger than we are.
I think he's a year younger,
Which changes the dynamic a little bit. I noticed when I first met Seth on a different show, not Family Guy. It was when Family Guy had been briefly canceled. We were working on a show called The Pits, run by Mike Scully. Fantastic writer's room. But Seth and I formed an instant rapport because we're basically the same age. Right. And we had the same frame of reference for things. We both liked, you know, Star Wars. And we both, you know, just kind of grew up having the same, you know, I'm sure he would be hysterical about raisins, rice, and rye. Like, that's his whole, or raisins, rice, and
rye!
There you go. But so with someone like Seth, who is a celebrity and was the king shit of Family Guy and has become an even bigger celebrity through Ted, through, you know, Million Ways, through Orville, whatever. He's now a known thing. But our relationship with Seth started off in a different way because we're sort of the same age. But there was always like a level of respect that I had for Seth when I first met him, because it's like, oh, this kid who's younger than I am has already created like a successful show.
Yeah.
And then it changed because I was working with him on someone else's show. And then when he asked me to come work on Family Guy, as he did with you, your relationship changes with him. And not in like a terrible way, like, oh, now it's all work. But all the things you just said, now you're expected to be ready for this guy, to pitch funny lines for this guy, to keep justifying why this guy hired you. And I think that, again, if you can just keep doing that, keep having confidence in yourself and your own ability keep pitching jokes. Even if you have days where you're not feeling it, you know what? Start to feel it. Make yourself feel it.
Yeah.
We're very lucky
also because he has that sort of Rat Packy mentality of he loves all jokes, even at his expense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
So he he opens himself up to it in a great way, and that helps everything move along. But I think
totally
to your point, there's two parts of the job. The part of doing the job of when you're called upon producing, but it's also being ready to be called upon for however long that takes. And I think, you know, when I went to acting school in New York and I did a 2-year program and I wasn't going to be some theatrical actor, but one of the major thing was preparing for your moment. And the thing that's hard about theater acting is because of the timing is like, you know, say you have to be weeping because someone died. It's like, you don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but you have to find these ways of firing yourself up.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when it does happen, you can come out and do it, even if like some lady in the audience just, you know, unwrapped a ton of hard candies and some guy's cell phone is ringing it. You have to like block that out. And so it's waiting around is part of it.
Yes. And waiting around and being ready to go. It's like an athlete, you know, I mean, we're not athletes,
no,
but it's like an athlete. Like if you get called on to, you know, kick that field goal or, you know, go in the game, you got to be ready. I don't know why I made us kickers, but that seemed like the most appropriate thing that we might be. I'm trying to think of any other people along the way that, I mean, we had to, you know, on Dads, that was a whole different thing. When you work on a sitcom and you've run your shows, you have to deal with actors. And it's a slightly different dynamic if you're running the show and dealing with the actors, because you guys are kind of both looking at each other. Like, they have a level of respect for you and they're expecting stuff from you, and you have a level of respect for them because they're the performers. But it was just the dynamic there was a little bit different.
So one of the more difficult situations, especially when you're first starting out, can be when you're on set and you have to note a celebrity's performance, because we talked about we don't like getting notes. And
no,
certain actors, I honestly don't understand the actor's perspective, whether they like it or not. I think actors sometimes, like writers, tend to be insecure. So it's, you know, am I doing okay? So was that good? Was that good? Was that good? But really, the subtext is kind of like, that was good, wasn't it? And please don't tell me it wasn't good. And if it wasn't good, please tell me in different terms that it wasn't good. But I might be reading into that. I just don't know. I don't actually understand it.
You're right, because it goes both ways. I feel like the natural instinct that we have as writers is like, don't give me notes. Everything I write is perfect. And I think we put that on actors. And I think a lot of that is true. I think a lot of actors do feel that way. Like, don't fucking give me a note. I've been studying this shit for 20 years. But I also think that there are actors who like getting notes because they feel like the showrunner has a clear vision of what they want. And that gives them like a certain level of confidence. Like, this guy has a vision and I'm going to ride with it. But it's difficult to know who those different people are. And you have to figure it out as you go.
Yeah, I think conveying that sense of vision is important because, you know, on United We Fall, when Jane Curtin was on the show, and she's someone who I couldn't even believe we got and just have and continue to have so much reverence and respect for.
That's amazing.
That the first time you're out there and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I really want to kind of like give her a note on this performance. You know, the thing that I found that works is they're like us. It's like they want to hear in the clearest, most concise term possible what you want, and they'll either agree with it and disagree with it and either do it or not do it. But what they don't want is to sit through a bunch of fumfering
and rambling
and like fake praise to get to the, you know, I love that, but when I'm really, you know, and that was great, and so, but can we try it? Like, you just say, hey, I'm thinking in this scene she's a little more nervous than you're playing her, and then she might say, well, why would I be nervous, XYZ, and you would say, I think you're nervous because XYZ. And they'll either make sense or not. And the best thing to do is to just say what you think and have them say what they think. And hopefully come to a better performance, which is the goal. And because the goal isn't to make you feel good for interacting with a celebrity. The goal isn't to make them love you. It's to just be in a workplace and get work done that's good work.
And get the best result possible.
And the bigger the star, like, the more they actually know and appreciate that.
That's 100% right. I think the overall note here is to have an appropriate level of confidence in yourself when dealing with celebrities. You have to, it's something you have to figure out, and it's a case by case basis, but you have to have confidence so they respect you and they respect what you're doing. Yeah. And they don't think that you're like some meek little nervous energy person that they don't want to be around and they can't trust.
Yeah.
So appropriate level of confidence, not overconfidence, because we've seen that and that goes horribly as well. So you have to find that appropriate middle.
And be succinct.
Yes.
Because if they want to talk more, they'll start talking more and that'll be your cue to talk more.
Right. Yes.
If they don't want to talk more, you shouldn't be talking.
Yeah. Nope.
So one, two sentences you want, and get the fuck out of there.
So when I was at SNL, I worked in the music department as well as the audio department, and often I would be tasked to learn a newly written song just for table read. And if Eli, the musical director, was too busy working with the cast, he would assign me to the host to teach them to sing this song.
Right.
So let's say, let's say it's Liev Schreiber, Schreiber. So I don't know if he can sing.
Let's pick a celebrity whose name you know.
I know. Well, I just think of him because when he walked in, he has like a very intimidating presence.
Yeah.
And he walks in, and every time someone comes in to learn something, I'm not like, hey, how's it going? I'm not like my normal cheery, interactive self. I just say, hey, here's the song. I just go straight to it. I'm not here to make friends.
Right.
But he could sense that I was a little nervous.
Yep.
And he made a joke. I don't really remember what it was, but the whole room laughed because he knew that I was being watched by everybody.
Two Asian ladies walk into a bar.
I was going to say, because you don't know him, someone was like, hey, Liev Schreiber. And then you all indignant say, okay, I'll leave, but I don't know who Schreiber is. My name's Janice. No, get back here.
But I will say, you know, in every one of those instances, you're right. It is about being concise. I spent, you know, there were many shows where I had to do this, sometimes work with a cast, and then the song would change in the middle of learning it, and then we'd all have to learn it, and then I would be teaching harmonies. Right. And there is no time to be best friends. I was never really friends with any of the cast members or, you know, any of that, but it's about being concise and just getting the job done and creating the results as fast as possible.
Yes. And then you're fake friends. And when you run into each other in the future, they're like, oh, we work together.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And it looks to everyone watching like you're friends.
Yeah. It's totally the worst though.
So I guess to add on more advice is, if you look like me and Goldie, have a certain level of confidence, and if you're a beautiful woman, you can just kind of go in and everything's going to work out.
No.
Liev Schreiber will tell you a joke.
Right. Well, no, you do definitely have to have confidence, because the second you don't, that you just, nobody will respect you. Yeah.
They can smell that.
There'll be a quiet meeting about you, and then you won't be invited back.
Right, exactly.
Yep. Confidence seems to be the theme. All right. That was fun to talk about. But now let's get to a popular part of the show that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Ah, there we are singing. That's so lovely. Best thing we'll ever do. We have a Top 5 this week that I think will be interesting to you listeners. It is Top 5 Smells. Top 5 Smells. Pretty self-explanatory. I'm happy to go first if no one gives a shit. Okay. My number 5 smell. I'm going to start off creepy here.
Oh boy.
And let me just say that this is me as a high schooler. Top 5 smells.
No.
Number 5 is finesse shampoo in a girl's hair.
Okay.
Oh
okay.
My God.
Thank God. I thought you were going to say sniz.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
It's a euphemism for female genitalia.
Oh,
it was kind of popular in the 80s.
Yeah, in Massachusetts.
Oh,
you smell
God.
A sniz? Nope.
Oh.
It's sniz-ness. sometimes you need a little sniz-ness.
Oh.
No, finesse in a girl's hair was absolutely a top 5 smell. And it might be my Proust's Madeleine.
Oh, wow.
Okay, number 4. Now we get into an easy one. These are the layups. Bacon. Yeah. Bacon.
Oh, there you go. Four is bacon. Really good one. I didn't think of that.
And now here's one where you may all disown me and get a little cringy, but I'm going to say it anyway. Number three.
Oh my God.
Number three, my own shit.
Oh, God.
What?
It's
what
such
a sense. I got to smell your shit.
It's a sense of accomplishment. It's the smell of victory.
Oh,
it means my day is going to go well. So live with it. Number three, my own shit. There, I'm going to say
Whoa,
it again. Okay, moving on from that as quickly as possible. Number two, a newly opened can of Play-Doh.
Oh,
I'll never forget the smell. I love the smell of a newly opened can
it's
of Play-Doh.
Hard to take anything seriously after number three.
My own shit.
How do you make your own shit number two also? That just, that's oh, no. What a giant oversight.
Huge oversight. Oh my God, you're right. What a fucking oversight. Okay, number two is a freshly opened can of Play-Doh. And number one, again, for me, this is a layup, and I'm this guy. At the gas station, I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
I love the smell of fresh petrol, as they say across the pond. Fresh petrol.
Can I go? Because that was my number five.
Yeah.
Like,
go.
That's a good, perfect
lead,
segue. And I thought
right
that was going
to
be kind of something I would have to explain.
Nope.
No, it's so
go
good.
For it.
I used to
have these old BMW motorcycles, and they would leak and just smell of gas.
It was, I love it.
Felt alive.
Yep.
That's number five.
Yeah.
Number
Beautiful.
Four, leather.
I love the way you said it.
Sorry to all the animals out there, but when they kill, tan, and hide you, it's one of the great smells. You know you're in a classy situation because you're surrounded by leather. Number three is coffee.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
Beans of any variety.
Yes.
Oh, what a great
God.
One.
Wow, I overlooked
Best part
so many
of waking here. Up.
Oh,
number two, and don't take this the wrong way, it is fresh baby.
Oh, yes. No, it's yes. true.
A new human being.
Yeah.
You just stick
just
their
so...
head right into your nostrils.
So sweet.
I hope nobody from QAnon is listening to this because it'll only confirm
it
what
just,
they think about
it. It ends with the smelling.
Okay, good, good.
But
not
man,
the
do
eating.
They smell good. And number one's a very specific thing. It's when you go into the ocean and then you get out of the ocean and you've been in the sun and then you smell yourself.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of like your
I don't
own
know
shit.
What you call that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's your version of your own shit. I like it. I'm
taking
it.
Way more pleasant.
Yeah. Basically the same thing. All right.
Dried ocean on skin.
Wow.
I love that. But,
yeah,
you know, that's like... remember the Seinfeld where Kramer wanted to market that cologne called
beach.
The Beach.
Yeah.
The Beach.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like that. That's great, though.
Yes.
Great list.
Well, I chose to leave the sort of like... might be creepy scents off because I don't know. I should have just gone with it because
you
guys
clearly.
Just owned it.
Yeah, we sure did.
So my number five is also a freshly opened can, but it's of tennis balls.
Ah.
Like, oh. Psh. Better than whoop ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good smell. That's a good smell.
So number four.
Yeah.
Pizza. Fresh pizza. When you're walking down the street, it's like
pizza
oh my
so
God,
good.
I need a slice. Right
I know.
Now.
We owe it to pizza to put it on this list.
God.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Number three is the smell of wood burning from a fireplace.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Like, you smell it out. Even when
That's
you smell
nice
it out there.
One.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's a good one. Crisp air. Crisp Cape Cod air.
Yeah. Oh, and
some,
you even
some Trump
a
supporter
fire.
Making a nice fire a couple houses down. Oh, it's the
exactly.
best.
Number two, this is a very personal one. I'm Filipino is my background. And when my mom makes a dish called chicken adobo, I don't know if anybody's heard of it.
Oh, that's nice.
It is, I mean, if you're not hungry, or even if you're vegan, you're going to want to eat this. So.
I mean, can you imagine if Alec ate that and then shat it out?
The combination.
Would, yes, that would
the
be
combination. If I had pizza for lunch, chicken adobo for dinner the next morning, and a cup of coffee on the toilet,
coffee, yes.
I'm in heaven.
And then my number one is fresh cut jasmine. It's like, and I was very
misfire.
What is, no, for me.
I thought you were going to say fresh cut grass.
Wow, that was a launch pad explosion that was.
No,
that was the one where the missile just goes sideways.
Not that great. Everything else was great.
Yeah, no, I love jasmine. It's my number one.
It smells good. You know, it's a personal preference. It's
yeah,
a personal preference.
And
I think I'm mixing it up with lavender. I don't know any. I don't know anything.
Yeah, lavender's overrated. Lavender's,
I remember there was a girlfriend I had, and we went to Hawaii, and one of the things she wanted to do was like
a three-way.
No, not her. The one of the things was like, and then there's this day where we can just lie in a field of jasmine.
Oh,
and
I was like, that's probably jasmine.
I'm not doing that in Hawaii. I'll go to the spice section and sniff it. There's so much else to do. I don't want to lie in a field of jasmine.
It's so funny, though. The JC saying that totally triggered that memory in you, which is why you didn't like it.
Yeah,
so
and I don't even know what lavender is, I guess.
Yeah, lavender's the purple one, and jasmine is little white flowers.
No, I would have thought they were both purple.
Every plant is just every flower is a flower. There you I know go. A rose.
That's the
and
poet.
That's it.
A rose by any other name.
It's not jasmine.
I don't know how the rest of that goes. Anyway, we have those are all great lists. I don't care what Goldie said about your number one, JC. I defend your right to say it.
Thank you.
But we have a big announcement about the top fives right now. Huge announcement.
Yes.
Which is we want to incorporate, have the fans involved a little more, give you a little more time to think about these top five lists so we don't just spring them on you. So you have the whole week to think of your own. So we're now going to start announcing next week's top five right now. And the way we're going to do it, it's very controversial. One of us has total control unilaterally is going to decide, and I'm going to spring it on these other two right now. And then next week, you know, JC will pick it, or the week after that, Goldie will pick it, and we all just have to deal with it. So we're eliminating a lot of texts between ourselves.
Yeah, less texts.
Which I think is good. A lot of emojis. We're losing a lot of emojis.
I'm gonna keep those emojis.
So right now, for you listeners and for you two, here is next week's top five, and there's nothing you can do about it. Next week's top five is top five sporting events we wish we attended.
Oh, I like it.
Top five sporting events we wish we had been at.
That's amazing.
To end with a preposition.
It's a good one.
So there it is. We think that'll be fun for everyone. All right, good. Nice. I'm glad it didn't cause mass chaos. All right, here we go. Now it's time to end our show as we do every week on a high note. Thank you, Tom Gamble. God, that high note goes on for like an extra half second that makes it so funny. Very good comic timing on that high note. Would anyone like to start off?
I want to go last.
Can I go?
Sure, go ahead, JC. Okay.
So at the end of the year, I didn't get to say what I was, you know, grateful for the end of the year. In fact, I went with like a tennis thing, of course, which is really not what I should have done for our last one of the year.
Yeah, it was lackluster.
It really was. So I don't know. Most people don't know that. I don't even know if Goldie knows this, but when we started, before we started the podcast, I was in a recording session over Zoom with Alec, and we had time. We were sort of like waiting around, and it was like silence. And then, I don't know, Alec decided to just start interacting and was hilarious. I was just like, holy shit. We were all laughing, and it made me think. And I was just like, I don't know. I think it'd be cool to do a podcast with Alec, but why would he want to do a podcast with me? This is weird, whatever. And my friend Ross was just like, just email him. And I said, I don't have to be talking. I don't have to be a part of it. I just think that this person could make a great podcast. And the gift was not only Alec, but was Goldie. Because he, you guys had obviously been talking about this.
I finally see why you were talking about this. Okay.
Yeah.
It took a while to get there, but we got to the real gold. Goldie.
Yes, the gold was Goldie because, you know, he had mentioned, I've been talking about this with my friend Jonathan Goldblatt. And I'm like, what? I'm Googling him. Why haven't I heard of him? I trusted Alec in this. And our very first trial recording was, remember, Goldie, you were out in your car and in the dark, and it was still hilarious. We had never met. It was our first time ever talking. And I was like, this is going to be a hilarious podcast. Like, I just knew right then and there that the chemistry between you guys and how much I was laughing, if I was laughing this much, I think Alec is frozen. If I was laughing this much, then I felt like the listeners would be laughing just as much. So
I love it.
My high note.
And I speak for Alec when I say thank you. And we love doing it with you.
Thank you. Alec is calling me.
Okay. One sec. Let's see what's happened. Okay, so Alec's internet went down. So we're now going to hold a cell phone up to the mic as he does his high note.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for that touching high note of yours. And it's been a great pleasure doing this podcast with both of you. And yes. JC, I remember how nervous you were because you didn't know Goldie. And that wasn't wasn't your idea to begin with. But then after the very first time that you heard Goldie in any capacity, you were like, oh my God, this guy's hysterical.
Yes.
Which I have known since 96. So that was a pleasure.
Yeah.
But my high note, okay, put me up to the microphone
for
this.
You're here,
My high note for this week is Tom Brady. Again, our big fan, my close personal friend, my Instagram buddy, Tom Brady. So Tom Brady this week, they had a game against the New York Jets. Things were not going very well. It was in New York. They were losing. It was a frustrating game. But then, lo and behold, come the fourth quarter, they're down 4 points with very little time left on the clock. Brady goes bing, bang, bong in for a heartbreaking touchdown against the New York Jets. How heartbreaking was this touchdown, you ask? Well, some big fans of Brady and the Patriots and Jets haters may have gone on to a Jets fan board to read what they were saying. Let me share one of my favorite quotes with you. Okay. Here's the quote. I just threw my glass table at my 65-inch TV, shattering both of them. This team has humiliated me and my entire family. My wife and kids are in tears as 40-plus guests clear out of my house. Just threw my jersey into the fire pit. I can't do this anymore. Goodbye. That was without question my high note. It may end up being my high note of the year.
I love it.
So good. Anyway, Goldie loves it.
And I'll just say, just to wrap up quickly, my high note is that my good friend Alex Sulkin got a generator. So I don't have to worry anymore about his power going out pre-podcast. And we did it together, buddy. Congratulations. We're done with this podcast. We'll talk to you next week. That has been all for Atypical Disgusting Display. We're intensive care, we need more than regular care.